Next speaker is Joel Blaustein from the Michigan Department of Community Health in Lansing. And for those of you who haven't heard, Michigan State is in the Final Four. And as somebody who went to medical school at the University of Connecticut, all I can say is you're going to need a lot of luck. But moving along, for those of you who don't know the history of varicella, before there was vaccination in the mid-1990s, just about every kid in the United States got infected with varicella zoster virus. So there were essentially about 4 million infections every year in the United States. And since ACIP made a recommendation for routine immunization in 1996, the incidence has fallen 90%. So there are currently probably about 400,000 infections in the United States every year. And partly in recognition of that, in 2003, CSTE recommended case-based surveillance for varicella. And at this point, probably about 35 states, or at least 35 that we know of, have gone to case-based reporting for varicella, including Michigan. And Joel's going to provide us with an update on what's going on with varicella surveillance there.
Yes, I'm going to discuss varicella surveillance in Michigan with respect to our transition to individual case reporting that was just somewhat alluded to, I think. And then I'm going to describe a simple, pretty simple descriptive analysis that we undertook using the newly available data provided by this case-based reporting. Let me start with some background that's probably familiar to many of you who are involved in vaccine-preventable disease surveillance work. In 2002, or around there, the Council of State and Territorial Epidemiologists recommended that national standardized varicella surveillance be included in the National Notifiable Disease Surveillance System that Sandy mentioned. And that was in an effort to better monitor the epidemiology and changing epidemiology of varicella and the impact, of course, of varicella immunization, and as well to provide data to inform future vaccine policy decisions. CSTE suggested that CDC encourage states at that time to conduct ongoing varicella surveillance if they weren't already doing so, and specifically to establish individual case reporting for varicella, similar to that kind of reporting that's done for most other notifiable diseases. And in turn, in 2005, CDC actively encouraged states to implement case-based reporting. In Michigan, surveillance for varicella has been a reportable disease for many decades. So we have a pretty long-standing surveillance database. Going back, I could find, to 1955, but actually I think we have some case counts going back even further. However, for most of its history, our varicella database has been pretty simplistic. It just involves basic case counts from local health departments on a weekly basis to the state health department, without any data available on demographic or other epidemiologically relevant variables. Of course, with the advent of varicella vaccine, more data became more important, and our surveillance began to evolve with our varicella prevention and control program and vaccination programming, such that we moved from, in the pre-vaccine era, the simple case count system that I just mentioned, to, in the early vaccine preventable stage, which corresponds roughly to 1998 to 2004, a system for tracking case counts, but now by defined age groupings. And then finally, to the implementation of case-based, individual case-based reporting and surveillance that was encouraged by CSTE and CDC. And we felt we could do that once the era of varicella vaccination was really well established. So that was 2005 for us. This slide shows the trend in reported varicella incidents in Michigan, and I guess nationally, as Dr. Armstrong alluded to. This is between 1980 and 2007. Prior to vaccine licensure in 1995, incidence rates in Michigan varied between roughly 300 and 500 cases per 100,000 population. Following vaccine licensure, rates fell precipitously And we've observed an 87% decline in recent years compared to the pre-vaccine era rates. This slide demonstrates the same trend, but shows reported numbers of cases rather than incidence rates. And as mentioned before, we believe that the actual number of cases annually in the pre-vaccine era really approximated the size of the annual birth cohort, which in Michigan at that time was roughly 130,000. So we figured that there were really about 130,000 cases occurring every year. Clearly then, there's significant underreporting, and probably still is, since the 30 to 40,000 cases that are shown in this slide are just about a quarter of the birth cohort. The vaccine, as I mentioned, was licensed in 1995, and through the remainder of the 90s and then the early 2000s in Michigan, the number of cases continued to steadily decline. And in recent years, we appear to have reached a plateau, as you can see, with somewhere between 4,000 and 5,000 cases reported annually. Although I will mention, adding on some provisional data that we have now from 2008, we've seen a resumption of the decline, about almost 30% fewer cases in 2008. At least provisionally, compared to 2007. Now, this slide superimposes the immunization coverage levels of Michigan's two-year-old cohorts, and that's shown by the yellow line. And this is the coverage data that's from the National Immunization Survey. And I guess I just had to show this because it, of course, demonstrates the really gratifying correlation of the accelerated decline in disease incidence as a function of increasing immunization levels. Well, as we prepared to transition to individual case-based reporting, there were various types of planning and logistics support that were needed. Some examples include legal support. For example, we had to amend our communicable disease rules. The actual existing language in our communicable disease rules specified that varicella only had to be reported in the form of a case count. So we had to first take care of the legal underpinnings to move to more detailed information. And then there was education. We had to inform and train our disease reporting partners and investigators about the change to case-based reporting for varicella and orient them to the additional data and data elements that we wanted. There was infrastructure support that was needed as well. For example, we had to modify our electronic reporting system and our database to accommodate additional varicella case data elements. And perhaps most importantly, there was personnel support. We had to recognize that there was clearly additional time and effort that would be needed to investigate and obtain data on some 5,000 cases each year. So implementation of case-based reporting began in Michigan with the start of the 2005-2006 school year. And that made sense because a lot of our varicella reporting really derives from schools and daycares. The data that we sought was based on the data elements that are delineated on the CDC varicella worksheet, surveillance worksheet that many of you are probably familiar with. But recognizing that the burden of attempting to investigate in detail some 5,000 cases would likely place on public health resources, we acknowledged that the most important data elements at this stage of our surveillance would be the case's age, the immunization history, and a measure of the severity of illness as reflected by the approximate number of lesions that a case had. So this became, in essence, the acceptable minimum case investigation that we were looking for. And this is a priority data scheme that was consistent with guidance that we got from CDC. I just want to take a moment and expand on the matter of using this estimated number of lesions as a proxy for disease severity. We distributed some guidance to providers and disease reporters and investigators for estimating the number of lesions and tried to group them into one of four categories, which were less than 50 lesions in a case. And the guidance was that you could pretty easily count the number of lesions within about half a minute. And then 50 to less than 250 lesions, with the guidance being that the patient's hand could be placed on an affected part of their body without covering one or more lesions. And then 250 to less than 500 lesions where the patient's hand couldn't be placed on an affected part of their body without covering at least one lesion. And then finally, 500 or more lesions where normal skin couldn't be visualized. So here's some photos, just to give you an idea, showing examples of cases in each of these four different categories. So 2006 was the first full year that our case-based reporting approach for varicella was in effect. And the expanded surveillance data that was now available provided us an opportunity to analyze the occurrence of varicella in Michigan in ways that were not previously possible. And this led to some basic questions of interest to us. First of all, is it indeed feasible to obtain case-specific data on a vaccine-preventable disease that's still fairly endemic, as I said, involving about 5,000 cases per year? And in a time when public health resources are pretty stretched pretty thin. And I'm going to show you this cartoon. The caption reads, it's kind of cut off. It says, "I don't ask for much, but what I get should be of very good quality." And I guess this kind of characterizes our feeling at the state level and probably at the federal level that we're not asking for too much. We'd like to have some better quality data, and we felt the time was ripe to transition to case-based reporting for varicella surveillance. But I think it's important to acknowledge and recognize the local level sentiment, which is probably more characterized by this cartoon, which reads, "No, but I can give you an unfunded mandate." I think there was some pushback from local health departments in our state who felt that the expanded surveillance approach to varicella really involved a lot of effort and comes at a time, as I mentioned, when public health resources are declining pretty much, especially in our state. So we had to be cognizant of this as we moved forward. But assuming that we were able to have some success with collecting this additional case information, the next question was, what are some of the basic descriptive epidemiologic patterns occurring currently in Michigan with varicella? So we undertook, as I mentioned, a fairly simple analysis of our data and identified the following objectives. First, to assess the completeness of reporting, much like Sandy was talking about earlier, with respect to some basic demographic information and those priority data elements that I mentioned earlier. And then specifically to test the hypothesis that breakthrough varicella disease, that is varicella that occurs in someone who previously had vaccination against varicella, is milder than disease in unvaccinated persons. And using specifically this large-scale statewide population-based surveillance data set that was available to us now. And that's a finding that's been noted in some other studies, including outbreak investigations and one in Michigan that we're involved in, as well as some of the active surveillance projects for varicella. So the methods consisted of extracting the 2006 varicella reports from our electronic disease reporting database and then reviewing them to summarize proportions of completeness with respect to those data elements I mentioned earlier. In addition, we examined the data for an association between prior varicella immunization history and disease severity as measured by the reported category of number of lesions. And I should mention in doing this, we dichotomized the measure of disease severity into just two classes, either mild, consisting of fewer than 50 lesions, or moderate to severe disease, consisting of 50 or more lesions. And so here are our results. In 2006, there were a total of 5,200 varicella cases reported to our statewide system. Gender was reported for over 98%, and there were just slightly more males reported than females, yielding a male to female gender ratio of 1.04 to 1. Age was reported for 99.5% of cases, and the median age was 7 years, with a range of 1 month to 86 years. The age breakdown of our 2006 cases is shown in this slide. 62% of all cases were between 5 and 9 years of age, 23% were 10 to 19 years of age, and then fewer in the other age groups, 13% 0 to 4 years of age, and then 2% occurring in adults 20 years of age or older. With respect to prior immunization, vaccination history was available for just about 87% of reported cases. And of these, 77% reported having received varicella vaccine in the past. And as I mentioned, we then looked at the association between prior varicella immunization history and disease severity. So here's a 2x2 table summarizing those 2006 cases. There were 3,892 cases, or about 75% of those reported, with information on both vaccination status and disease severity. And among the vaccinated persons, 28.4% fell into the moderate to severe illness category, compared with 70% among unvaccinated persons. And this corresponded to a relative risk of 0.41 with confidence intervals, 95% confidence intervals, limits of 0.38 and 0.44. In other words, a negative association. And illustrating that with this data, for instances of breakthrough disease, vaccination had a significantly protective effect against moderate to severe disease. More recently, we've finalized all our 2007 data and we're able to replicate the analysis for 2007. So let me just go through that quickly. It's very similar to 2006. In 2007, there were fewer cases reported, 4,191. Gender was reported for slightly over 97%, and again, males slightly predominated. Age was reported for over 99% of cases, and the median age in 2007 was 8 years, with a range 2 months to 96 years. The breakdown of cases by age in 2007 was similar to that of 2006, the majority again being in the 5 to 9 year age group, 30% in 10 to 19 years of age, and the rest, as you see. And with respect to immunization history, this information was available for about 86% of cases reported in 2007, and of these, 78% reported having previously received varicella vaccine. And again, we looked at the association between prior varicella immunization history and disease severity. And it was similar, very similar to 2006. Previous vaccination demonstrated a negative association with moderate to severe illness. In fact, the proportions were very similar, and the estimate for the risk ratio was very similar, in fact, the same, with the same 95% confidence limits. So again, we concluded for 2007 that vaccine was protective against moderate to severe illness when breakthrough disease did occur. This slide just compares the 2 years and shows that there were essentially similar findings. The gender ratio was comparable, slightly more males both years. The percent vaccinated was similar, 77% in 2006, 78% in 2007. The completeness of age reporting was similar overall, 99% plus, and the median ages were similar, 7 years in 2006 and 8 years in 2008. It's interesting to note that the proportion of cases among 10 to 19 year olds increased by 7 percentage points from 23% in 2006 to 30% in 2007, with a comparable decrease in the proportion of cases among 5 to 9 year olds. I think this suggests that the proportional burden of disease is shifting to older persons, which is somewhat expected and has been noted in other diseases and other varicella projects as well. Finally, I just wanted to show you, here are the age distributions for the 2 years, and we've limited cases here and in the previous slide to those cases under 50 years of age. I think the most obvious is the drop in the number of cases. The curves are essentially similar in shape, but there seems to be a slight flattening in 2007 and shifting to the right, perhaps. Here's 2008 added in our provisional cases. And again, the overall decline and maybe some change in the shape shifting towards the older age groups. We did note that the mean age increased in across these 3 years by about half a year each year. So to summarize and in conclusion, from this analysis, we drew the following conclusions. Varicella incidence has declined significantly over the past 13 years since the vaccine's been available, and certainly correlates with the increasing uptake and coverage with varicella vaccine in the childhood population. The decline in incidence reached a plateau in Michigan in the period 2002 to 2007, stabilizing at around 4,500 cases per year. The transition to case-based varicella surveillance in our state has been largely successful and has proven feasible, but we recognize that it does challenge public health resources because the magnitude of disease occurrence remains pretty high, at least relative to other vaccine-preventable diseases. These data support other findings that vaccine effectiveness, and this is largely one dose in these years that I'm described, that vaccine effectiveness is good, but breakthrough varicella disease is not an uncommon occurrence. Michigan data provide evidence on a population basis that breakthrough disease is milder than varicella among unvaccinated persons. And finally, the data suggests that there's at least the possibility that the burden of disease proportionately is shifting to older age groups. And I'd like to acknowledge the local health departments in Michigan who really helped us and collected all the data and provided it for us for this analysis. Thank you.
Thanks. While we're waiting for people to come up to the microphone, one question I had. You mentioned during both years about 77 or 78% of cases were in kids who had been vaccinated. What was the approximate vaccination coverage in the state during that time?
I don't have it off the top of my head, but there might be others here who know. I think it's approaching 90% in Michigan for the two-year-old mm-hmm. cohorts in recent years. Mm-hmm. Okay. I should have thought to bring that.
All right. Raphael Harpa, CDC. Thanks a lot, Joel. Had a couple of questions. First of all, since you have the unique opportunity, having had decades of aggregate reporting and then transitioning, do you have any ability to kind of determine the resources that have gone into that shift, given the epidemiology as it was then and the epidemiology as it is now, and just to get some sense for the number of FTEs? I think that would be a very interesting for people to know what's involved and so forth. So that's one question. The other question I had was if you know anything about the reporting sources for your state. You mentioned something about schools being a key part. And the last question I had was whether you were aware of any hospitalizations amongst vaccinated individuals in the last number of years.
Unfortunately, in retrospect, we realized that would have been a good thing to track was the resources that were involved in doing this. We just focused so much on trying to implement it that we really didn't approach it systematically in terms of tracking the resources that might be involved. I think we could maybe ballpark or do some surveying of local health departments. We're like a lot of other states, we have 45 autonomous local health departments, each of which approach surveillance. They're charged with surveillance and they approach it in slightly different ways. So maybe we could survey them and get some ideas. But I don't have a good idea. It certainly helped that it was just pure dumb luck that for years we never got rid of varicella reporting like a lot of states did. I think when they were they had it reportable, then decided not to because they weren't doing anything with the data, then had to reestablish it. So in some ways it wasn't too hard to get it going again, but there were some real resource issues that, and I don't have a good sense of that. In terms of the reporting sources, we and local health departments work, as I mentioned, really closely with schools. They've always been an important reporting source. I think it was pretty easy to get them going in terms of reporting varicella cases. What became more difficult was we had to follow up a lot more with parents or physicians to get more information.
So it was capture from And one of the things, as you look at shifting in ages, it seems to me that there's kind of this self-fulfilling thing that as a few more cases occur in high schools, there are better surveillance in high schools, so there's even more cases in high schools. So do you know anything about how well different, you know, primary schools, middle schools, high schools, whether do you feel that they're all kind of equally on top of it, or do you have?
I think there was a lot of variability in terms of the reporting, but I think it was similar to what happened before and after our switch to case-based reporting. I probably can't answer that question in much detail.
And finally, about any hospitalizations.
About hospitalizations. In the past, we tried to look at some discharge data. We need to go back and do that. We have an inpatient database that we could look at, but I did not, for these years, I haven't looked at.
And you
haven't had
it.
A chance to even look. We may have that in this data, but I haven't looked at it at all yet. Sorry.
All right. Thanks very much, Joel.
One more question.
Go ahead.
Two quick questions and possibly a comment. Just wanted to verify or confirm, in your presentation you presented vaccination data. Did you get that from your state registry?
For each individual case?
For the cases.
Largely. We have a pretty good, pretty well-established registry, and that's where most of the data comes from for immunization history, right?
And then my second question is, we're trying to encourage registries to populate vaccine or disease history for varicella or vaccination or disease history of varicella. And I was curious if any of your cases, if any of those names then get back into the registry. It's hard to calculate the vaccination coverage of your vulnerable population if you don't have your patients with disease in the system.
I'm not sure I understood.
Many registries have a field or a flag to check if someone has had a history of varicella disease. It's usually with the patient in the registry. And I was curious, you're collecting all these patients that have disease. Are you getting any of that back into the registry so that could then be flagged or checked off in the registry so when we calculate vaccination coverage needed in the vulnerable population, those without history of disease, we can do it properly?
We do have the ability in our registry to indicate prior disease diagnosis or even a titer if that was done. But you're saying follow-up on reported cases?
Yeah, you're collecting all these lists of names of people who have disease that should be shared with the immunization registry staff so that it could be checked off. I know a lot of it's happening passively in doctor's offices. You know, when they have the ideal scenario, the best practice would be a physician who has a patient come in, or if it's lab confirmed, would then check it off internally, you know, with the patient record on the registry. But you could also do a double check, a data quality check, to have those names, your list of names, a handy-dandy list, if you will, to then send to the immunization registry so they could then verify it and make sure that data is populated for proper calculation of coverage.
I think some of the local health departments do that. I guess one problem is that some of these cases probably aren't varicella, and there's not a lot of case confirmation going on with laboratory studies, so I don't know if that's, but I guess you're right, we would want to do that, and I think that's being done in some, but probably not consistently in all jurisdictions.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yes, so I have one last question.
Hello, Van Hoek, HPA England. I had a question. Do you have any experience now with the second dose? Are there cases coming up with people who had the double dose schedule?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear very well.
Do you have now any experiences with a double dose schedule? Do you see cases who had the two doses?
The question is, have we seen cases in persons who have received two doses? Not many, if any. We haven't yet implemented a requirement for a second dose. It's certainly a recommendation, and more kids are getting two doses, but it's not a requirement in our state. And for these years, most of the individuals had only one dose. It's a good point, and it's something we'll try to look at to see if there's more or continues to be breakthrough disease and with two-dose coverage. But I don't have any data on that.